yes, life is like this, or yes, life is like this, or yes, life is like this. It matters what you emphasize and where. I encourage you to read the little paragraph I wrote on the back. This month's theme in our Soul Matters worship packet, which is online if you'd like to look at it, is what does it mean to be a people of tradition? Tradition. The title of my talk comes from a book by Sharon Park that we've been using called Big Questions, Worthy Dreams, A Faith to Live By. She says religion, at its best, provides a dynamic distillation of images, symbols, stories, smells, sounds, songs, and gestures, powerful enough to shape into one the chaos of existence. Powerful enough to name a community's conviction of the character of the whole of reality. A conviction of the character of the whole of reality that its members experience as both ultimate and intimate. Religions of the world survive only when countless people are able to confirm, yes, life is like that. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about revelations as more adequate orientations to reality. Tradition, the handing down of statements, beliefs, legends, customs, information, etc., from generation to generation, especially by word of mouth or practice, a long-established or inherited way of thinking or acting. Synonyms are belief, culture, custom, ethic, folklore, habit, law, myth, ritual, wisdom. Wisdom. My understanding of religion has come to be, yes, life is like that. People live and experience a way of orienting in the world and pass forward that this works. It's not just handed down as something you have to assent to, but it's something that is lived. That phrase echoes in my head. Yes, life is like this. We've lived it. We're passing it on to you. I picked up a book in my office, which I inherited. People drop off boxes of books in my office when they're cleaning out their house because they think I need them, and I will read them, and somehow I will sort through them. But anyway, I just found this, and it's called A Year with Our Liberal Heritage, 52 Little Stories of Unitarian Universalist Heritage. And this one is on Francis David. 1568 is the year that it comes from. The first edict of religious toleration in the Western world occurred on January 6th, 1568. King John Sigismund of Transylvania, the only Unitarian monarch in history, proposed this revolutionary edict to the Diet at Turda. It was drawn up along lines suggested by the Unitarian theologian and court pastor Francis David. The edict proclaimed that no one in authority in Transylvania would be permitted to annoy or abuse anyone on account of religion. The basis for this edict was the affirmation that faith is the gift of God, not the business of the state. At the core of David's theology are three concepts. First, God is one. You can look at some of his statements. One, it's in our reading 566 in our hymnal. One is, you do not have to think alike to love alike. Try that one on. God is one. Jesus exemplifies God's perfection, but is not God. Jesus is to be followed, not prayed to. 1568. Second, God is spirit. God is the creator of the universe and all life and is merciful and loving toward all life and all creation. Third, God is absolute toleration. God grants freedom to all of God's creatures, and in humanity, God introduced the possibility of moral development and even perfection. To be a human is not a condition, but a mission to fulfill. To fulfill the human mission of moral development, human beings must be free to believe what seems right and true, to exchange information and views, and to grow toward the perfection of God. William Ellery Channing, 300 years later almost, said, "If faith is the gift of God, then we must have the freedom to form it, to express it, and to live by it." But as I was looking at just going over things this week, I don't know why I looked at this headline. It said, "Baptist pastors won't hear Ben Carson after young pastors object." And I went into the Christianity Today website, and here's what it said. This is almost, it's 450 plus years after Francis David. The mostly Calvinist preachers, objected to the beliefs of Carson's booming Seventh-day Adventist church, including the claim that worshiping on Sunday is sin and the idea that sinners who are barred from heaven will be annihilated rather than sent to hell. Imagine being concerned about that. They also objected to a statement made on Easter by Carson that Jews, Christians, and Muslims are all God's children. Quote, "Certainly, we do not all worship the same God. We worship the Trinity, whom Muslims and Jews would deny," leaders of the Baptist 21 wrote on their blog. "And the idea that we are all God's children is at best the type of liberalism the conservative resurgent sought to address, and at worst, what is it? It's universalism." On Monday night here, we had Michael Dowd speak to a group of about 60 of us. And Michael Dowd he calls himself a big history evangelist. He's spoken in the last 13 years. He and his wife, Connie Barlow, have been on the road, a lot like universalist circuit rider preachers, to deliver a presentation. He's delivered over 2,000 presentations and over 400 Unitarian Universalist congregations. And his book, Thank God for Evolution, which tries to combine science and religion, has been endorsed by 6 Nobel laureates. He told me all those things as I was walking up to introduce him. But here's what he said, and he said, "I'm a big history evangelist. I preach the gospel of right relationship to reality. That is the good news that is only possible when we individually and collectively live in right relationship to what is fundamentally and inescapably real. Yes, life is like this." Now, obviously, there are many different worldviews that inspire people to live in right relationship to reality. The one he says I'm particularly passionate about, I've come to call the path of sacred realism or factual faith. I'm an evidential mystic, and this is where he does his soundbite thing as he's walking across here, and I can't quite get it, but he says, "Reality is my God, evidence is my scripture, big history is my creation story, ecology is my theology, integrity is my salvation, and ensuring a just and healthy future, not just for humanity, but for the entire body of life, is my mission." If you didn't catch that, see his TED Talk. "What I evangelize is a synthesis of science and religion. It's neither science nor religion. It's a synthesis of the two that transcends and includes both. Right relationship to reality is what ultimately matters. Right relationship, whatever else it means, it has to mean being in right relationship to the air, the water, the soil, and the life of this planet, all life, and to each other. It also has to include being in right relationship to the future. On his PowerPoint, he clicks, and there's a picture of his granddaughter on his shoulder. He says, reality is what, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. Then what he does is a timeline, and he's up here, and the timeline is, he does it for 100 days, and I'm not sure exactly right, but all of us happen in hours in the last day, so that's how this works. 13.8 billion years ago, the universe is born in the Big Bang. 4.6 billion years ago, Earth. 1 billion years ago, multicellular life. 60 million years ago, primates. 250,000, hear the change of scale, humans as we know them. 8,000 years ago, agriculture. 4,000 years ago, city-states. Then you come up to 1980, where we realize we're exceeding the carrying capacity of Earth. 200 years ago with the Industrial Revolution, you can just pack all those things. That's a lot of life, being life and being lived before cars, jets, mortgages, corporations, computers, and retirement portfolios. Yes, life is like this. So ends our readings for the day. So when you look at Unitarian Universalism and you think about history, this community didn't just arrive here. It didn't just pop up among these Calvinists. It's the result of people living their lives over the years, hundreds of years. It's a continuation, an emergence of people who affirm, yes, life is like this. This orientation is a good guide for the landscape of life. The ideas, notion, the orientation to life and love being handed down have been tested by everyone's reason and experience. Hear the language of Francis David in 1568. Handed down by everyone's reason and experience, not just adhered to. Revelation is not fixed. Wisdom interacts and wisdom grows. So when we talk about faith, we're not talking about just assenting to a fixed set of propositions. We're using a word that says there is meaning in life to be found. And there is a community that says these are good ways to look. So let's take a look at our traditions. Unitarian Universalism. I've said it before, but I'll make it simple. Universalism is an ongoing tradition which says that God is a loving God. Okay? All people are saved, not just a select few. All are included. There is no hell. What that takes you to is you have to be challenged to orient by love, not to be oriented by fear. That's a difficult challenge, but we have to take it on. If you take it into more language of, as Michael Dowd would say, the reality, it's an inclusive universe. The sun shines on everybody, on the earth, creates. We have to align ourselves with the marginalized and the oppressed because there shouldn't be a marginalized and oppressed. Everybody has the right. We cannot use the language that they are other because they are not in the elect. Unitarianism, an exalted view of human possibility, originally with Jesus as an exemplar, there are religious exemplars. What does Karen Armstrong say the message of every religious exemplar has in common? Compassion. So if we ask the question, what does it mean to live well? The answer always doesn't come back, make a lot of money. It comes back, expand your circle of compassion. Jesus was not God in the Unitarian view. That's the tradition that's handed down, but we can aspire to be like him. We can aspire to be like Buddha. It's also a tradition that says, if you want to know what it means to live well in this reality, look at many of these exemplars and put that into practice. It also means the Unitarians framed it as, since we all have this possibility for improvement, that is, none of us are damned. I mean, that's the distinction. We have to help everybody be better. Okay? That means we contribute to those institutions that help improve people's lives. And the third piece is we are a radically incarnational faith. We're not assenting to, as Michael Dowd kept saying, unnatural propositions. He said, everything that is supernatural, just change supernatural to unnatural. So then he went through a whole long list, and it's, supernatural conception is unnatural conception. Supernatural birth is unnatural birth. Supernatural rising from the dead is unnatural rising from the dead. And he just kept doing that. But that's not about Jesus. That's about these stories that are put onto him. Incarnational practice. It matters what you do. It matters what you do with your life, because our job is to help bring that inclusive vision of the world into reality, of the universe, into reality in our lives and in the culture around us. If you open your hymnals to the first few pages there, it has our list of principles and purposes. Many people say that is a statement of belief. It's not. It just says that given these traditions, these orientations, these larger compass points, this is what we covenant to affirm and promote. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, covenant to affirm and promote. Practice, help make real in the world. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. You can go through a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. They come forward as ways of saying, yes, good life is like this. Move forward to this last week, and I want to talk to you a little bit about the trip we took on a bus on Wednesday to Raleigh, and we didn't get back till 2:30 in the morning, and I'm too old for that. But it was to participate in the Forward Together movement's Moral Monday, the third anniversary of that. It's now held on Wednesday because the legislature moved it from Monday to Wednesday to make it harder for people to get there in large numbers from other parts of the country, or period. You couldn't get there on Sunday and stay till Monday. It's an NAACP organized movement from way back, but it's a huge coalition of groups. This year there were 400 people there. Last year there were 10,000 people. It's a movement to include, that's that inclusive language, those who are being excluded from the right to live fully. You could add before God. The right to live fully before God. Their issues are voting rights, health care for all, environmental justice, equal protection under the law, women's rights, public education, immigrant rights, and labor rights, a fair minimum wage. We covenant to affirm and promote. It's the same language. The other piece I'd like to share with you is what it looked like. It looked like the diverse community we want to see, the world we are becoming. There were old and young, black and white, Jews, Muslims, Christians, Unitarian Universalists recognized by our different colored T-shirts, were maybe the biggest single identifiable block of the crowd that were there. There were students from the university. There were students whose center for the study of poverty, and I've forgotten the other part of the name, had been closed recently. They were all there together. It was that, as we have in the hymnal again, vision of an earth made fair and all her people one. You could look at that crowd and say, yes, life is like this. Or maybe say, it should be like this in that moment. Reverend William Barber, who is the head, the face of this, took before the speakers, and he had a moment of silence for Baltimore and for the people of Baltimore and for Frederick Gray and his family. And then the speakers came up and spoke. Now, when I spoke about my concern about the cuts in contributions to higher education, and also my concerns about cuts in public education here in Hendersonville, I had people who commented to me that that was too political. One of my insights at this march is that my presence there was not political. Well, you know, how can it not be political? You say that. But I wasn't there because of politics. I was there because my traditions tell me to be there. That the marginalized and the oppressed should not be marginalized and oppressed. The special and not special should not be divided. There should be opportunity for all. There should be good public education for everyone. The speakers spoke about what is a good life. William Barber spoke about how we should be good citizens of North Carolina. And then he quoted from the Constitution, the North Carolina State Constitution of 1868. It calls for beneficent provision for the poor, the unfortunate, and the orphan is one of the first duties of a civilized and Christian state. I was there because I was participating in my traditions. My traditions where Horace Mann was the champion, Unitarian was the champion of public education, Susan B. Anthony a champion for voting rights and rights of women. You just keep going on and on of what it calls you to be, engaging in practice and service for love, justice, and peace. I was also there because I can't just sit around. And I went on the bus. I struggled with the bus being not full, getting to a march that didn't have a lot of people, and yet I came away from it inspired and the sense that I was participating. And when I say it's not political, there are many people in here who are one political party or another political party. There are very few people that are of a third political party, right? And you'll say, well, I'm independent. But there are not that many choices. They're not in conversation with each other very much. But there's a grand old tradition of having socially liberal people who are fiscally conservative that identify as Republicans. there's a tradition of Democrats that I wouldn't want to be a part of as Democrat. So it becomes political because there are no other options. There's no other way to be in conversation. But it's not political from the sense of life is like this. It's inclusive. The sun shines on everybody. We have a chance to be better, and we should be the first job, the first common message of religious traditions is compassion. So we should be helping everybody be able to live better in this world. Engaging in practice and service for love, justice, and peace.